The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. If you would like to call, you know, it's just one of those days. Sometimes I feel a greater need to take phone calls than others, and I think this is one of those days. Now, obviously, if nobody wants to call, oh my goodness, I've got to share some information with you. Actually, we'll go to the phone calls a little bit later, but if I can, let me take off on this right here. The only thing that I really want you to do right now is just keep an open mind. You don't have to have all the answers. I know how people are wired. They think they have got everything figured out. I, on the other hand, know that I do not. But it's so exciting being able to learn. And so what I want you to do is just sit back, listen to what I have to say, and just evaluate for yourself what you believe the truth is. And so I came across a very interesting study that came from Iowa State University. I'm going to read this to you. Here's the full story right here. I'm trying to think when this came out. Anyway, okay, yeah, I'll get to that momentarily. Okay. This came from the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, and when I looked at that, I thought, okay, well, what is Alzheimer's? Well, you know what Alzheimer's is. If a person goes through this negative downward spiral of brain degeneration and they lose their ability to do normal daily functions, like just the normal activities of daily living, that ain't good. Because the hippocampus, that midline brain structure, begins to shrink and atrophy, then they lose their short-term memory. I started to say long-term, but you knew what I meant. Short-term memory. That's where a person with Alzheimer's, or the beginning stages of it, they can so easily repeat themselves and tell you the same information or say the same phrase or ask the same question over and over and over again. And they absolutely have no recollection of saying that. Anyway, here's a story right here from Iowa State University. The foods that we eat may have a direct impact on our cognitive acuity in our later years. This is the finding of an Iowa State University research study spotlighted in an article published in the November 2020 issue of the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. The study was spearheaded by principal investigator Oriel Willett, an assistant professor in food science and human nutrition, and Brandon Kleindienst, that's his name, a neuroscience PhD candidate working in the food science and human nutrition department at Iowa State. The study is a first-of-its-kind large-scale analysis that connects specific foods to later-in-life cognitive acuity. Well, what does this mean to you? Well, what this means is, whether it's me or you or anyone else that's an adult or even a child, you want to be able to age gracefully. You do not want your body to deteriorate before you're finished doing the work that God has set upon your heart to do. So Willett and Kleindienst and their team analyzed data collected from 1,787 aging adults. This was from the ages of 46 all the way to 77, so there's your age group right there, at the completion of the study. In the United Kingdom, through the UK Biobank, a large-scale biomedical database and research resource containing in-depth genetic and health information from 500,000 UK participants. The database is globally accessible to approved researchers undertaking vital research into the world's most common and also life-threatening diseases. Participants completed a fluid intelligence test, that's called the FIT test, fluid intelligence test, as a part of a touchscreen questionnaire at baseline, which was compiled between 2006 and 2010. So that was, what, 15 to 11 years ago. And then in two follow-up assessments conducted from the years 2012 through 2013, and again, once more, between 2015 and 2016. So the FIT analysis, which is the fluid intelligence test, you know, I'm not saying it's exactly an IQ test, but it's a very accurate way to measure the intelligence of a human being taking it. The FIT analysis provides an in-time snapshot of an individual's ability to think on the fly. Oh, that's interesting. To me, this is not the sort of thing you can prepare for. You either own it, or you have it, or you can do it, or you can't. You ever know what it's like to fly by the seat of your pants? Have you heard that phrase before? Sometimes I do that. Probably shouldn't. You know, but that's just the way the mind is wired. If you have to give a speech or a talk or teach a class, I don't know that any teacher feels like they're ever fully prepared, because I've asked a lot of people and they always say, yeah, I could have studied like a little bit more. I remember I asked a preacher one time how much time he put into a sermon, and he said about 18 to 24 hours. That was just so he could deliver a sermon that would last 20 to 30 minutes. But I thought that was impressive, though. So back to the FIT test. So the FIT analysis provides an in-time snapshot of an individual's ability to think on the fly. Okay? Participants also answered questions about their food and their alcohol consumption at baseline through two follow-up assessments. The food frequency questionnaire asked participants about their intake of things like fresh fruit, dried fruit, raw vegetables and salad. Yeah, salad counts as raw. Cooked vegetables, oily fish, and that would probably be things like salmon, lean fish, processed meat, poultry, that's chicken in case you don't know what that is, beef, lamb. What else do they do? Oh, yeah, they measured pork, cheese consumption, bread, cereal. Always think of Fruit Loops. Tea and coffee, beer, cider, red wine, white wine, champagne, and liquor. That pretty much covers everything. Okay. I know you're just like me. You want, what's the takeaway? What's the good stuff? What did they glean from the study? So here are the four most significant findings of the study. And I realize this may shock you, but I'm a pretty open-minded person, but I was glad to read this. So just consider this. Okay, what is the number one takeaway from this FIT study? By the way, this was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, so that should tell you their angle on it, right? Okay, here goes. Number one. Cheese by far was shown to be the most protective food against age-related cognitive problems, even late into life. I don't know about you, but that's kind of a comforting proposition. Now, here recently, I've kind of had my own personal kick on eating goat cheese. And, man, I just find it so appealing. It's so good. Now, maybe you don't like that, but there's no gaminess to it. It doesn't taste like you're smelling a goat. I know about goats. We used to have goats growing up on the farm, but it's not bad at all. But I like cheese. I mean, do you like cheese? So, number one, what's the number one takeaway? Cheese, by far, was shown to be the most protective food against age-related cognitive problems, even late into life. Now, let's just talk about that just for a brief moment, okay? This is my two cents right here. What is cheese? Well, cheese has an original starting point, and I'm just going to use goat as my example. So if somebody milks a goat, well, it's not the milk, but the milk is a starting point for making cheese. So just consider this idea. You take a substance, and then you let bacteria do what bacteria do, meaning good bacteria. They ferment. They change, they transform, they take a substance from its original form and they turn it into something else. So goat's milk, thanks to good beneficial bacteria, bam, you got goat cheese. And man, is it good. So maybe that one of the takeaways also is that the idea of fermentation might be really, really better for human beings than what human beings understand. Okay, listen to this next one right here, number two, because it's really in the same vein as number one. It said the daily consumption of alcohol. Now, any alcohol? No. They said particularly red wine. So one glass of red wine was related to improvements in cognitive function. Now, you know as well as I do, anything that God has created for us to consume as food or drink, it can be abused. If you drink 3 gallons of water in the next 10 minutes, you're going to die because it's going to dilute your calcium and your electrolytes, and your heart is going to cease to beat. It's going to seize up, okay? Don't do that. But one glass of red wine, it was related to long-term improvements in cognitive function. Now, I'm sure that you've heard this before, but if you haven't, I'll go ahead and mention it right now. There is a flavonoid compound that's found in red wine and in the skin of grapes. What is it called? It is called resveratrol. I think I remember maybe 6 months ago that in a laboratory setting, they purposely gave a drug to mice that would cause the small capillaries in their brain to become clogged up. And what would that do to the mice? Well, it'd make them forget. They'd develop Alzheimer's or dementia. If you don't have blood flow that goes to the region of the brain that controls certain memories, like how does a mouse work its way through a maze and then push the lever to get the food prize? Well, if you clog those vessels up, that's kind of inducing dementia or Alzheimer's in mice. Well, what was the substance they gave mice that cleared out all those arteries? It was called resveratrol. Let me say it again, resveratrol. So like, and I'll freely admit, I'm not the wine expert. There's a lot of people out there listening right now. They know every detail. They know the technical data. They know all about wines. Maybe they're a sommelier, for all I know. I don't know that stuff. But I know this. A glass of white wine, if you look at it through a glass, you probably think, you know what, there may not be much to that. Now, that would be as compared to a darker red wine, something that's got a real nutritional density. But in the red wine, that's where you have resveratrol. So what was number one? Cheese. That is a fermentation byproduct. It's not a genetically engineered food by a scientist. No. It's taken, you know, I think I read a long time ago that they think that the very first cheese of all time was a traveler across the desert. They would take a sheep's stomach and they would seal it off and they would fill it with milk. And then they would tie this sheep's stomach onto the saddle of a camel as they're going across the Sahara Desert. I'm just making that up. And what would happen is, with all the enzyme action in the bacteria in the stomach of the sheep, it would convert the sheep milk into cheese by the time he made it to the other end of the Sahara Desert. So he could celebrate by having wine and cheese. Maybe the best combination ever, according to some people. But anyway, you get the gist of it. And the same would be true for grape juice. You squeeze the blood from the grape, which is the grape juice, and you put it in the stomach of a sheep and the enzymes and the bacteria, bam, you've got wine at some point. I remember as a boy, my parents had a wine-making project. It was called Dandelion Wine. And so, obviously, I participate in that. I didn't know what it was. I never tried it. But if it came to going through the fields and picking dandelion flowers, well, I was game for that. And so, in this study, cheese was number one as the most protective food. You just need to let that kind of sink in. But number two was alcohol, but it was a glass of red wine. So, get this. Here's the number three takeaway from the study. And I realize not everybody's going to like this, but, you know, I'm going to report the truth, and then you evaluate and decide for yourself what you want to do with it, okay? They said the weekly consumption of lamb, but not other red meats, was shown to improve long-term cognitive prowess. Okay? And here's the number four takeaway. Now, what they're referring to is they're referring to highly refined salt. They're not referring to pink Himalayan salt or Celtic or Celtic salt. Those are the ones, or Redmond's sea salt. They're not talking about those. They're talking about salt that's been highly, highly processed that probably contains aluminum dust to keep it from sticking together. Anyway, number four takeaway, excessive consumption of salt is bad, but only in the individuals already at risk for Alzheimer's disease. That was it. If somebody was already given toward Alzheimer's, if you give those people a lot of refined salt, it can present a problem, or there's an association with it contributing to a problem. Now, you may not know this, but I'll tell you, but common table salt, like if you go to a restaurant and you see the white salt, that has aluminum in it. They have to use aluminum as an anti-caking substance to keep it from clumping together. Okay? All right, let me read what the researchers say right here. And this is Dr. Kleindienst. I'm probably butchering the guy's name. Sorry, Dr. Kleindienst. He says, I was pleasantly surprised that our results suggest that responsibly eating cheese and drinking red wine daily are not just good for helping us cope with our current COVID-19 pandemic, but perhaps also dealing with an increasingly complex world that never seems to slow down. Will Height said, while we took into account whether this was just due to what well-off people eat and drink, randomized clinical trials are needed to determine if making easy changes in our diet could help our brains in significant ways. Dr. Kleindienst added, depending on the genetic factors you carry, some individuals seem to be more protected from the effects of Alzheimer's, while some others seem to be at greater risk. Okay? That said, I believe the right food choices can prevent the disease and cognitive decline altogether. Whoa, I think I like that. Perhaps the silver bullet that we've been looking for is upgrading how we eat. Huh. Is that like radical? Come on. Knowing what that entails contributes to a better understanding of Alzheimer's and putting this disease in a reverse trajectory. Anyway, there you have it. There's the article for this morning. Let me know what you think about that. But in the meantime, if you need me, I am here for you. And the number here at the station to call, and you'll go right through to the phone lines, and I'd be happy and tickled if you did that. Please ask me a question. Give me something different to think about. Let's tackle a problem. Let's tackle a health problem. 903-586-5257 is the phone line to the program. This program is called Health Essentials. I'm your host, as always, Dr. Roy Morgan, and let's go to the phone lines. Oh, thank you so much for your phone call. How are you?
Great. How are you doing, Dr. Morgan?
Oh, I'm doing good. Yeah, you actually sound like you're pretty happy today.
I am. I'm pretty happy. I'm a pretty happy camper.
Are you happy all the time?
No, but pretty much, yeah.
Okay, good.
Joyful.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I have a question. My granddaughter was diagnosed with kidney stones.
How old is she?
She's 23, maybe, 24, something like that.
Can I take the short way to explain why she's got them?
Sure.
Okay. When she was born, there was a type of a bacteria that lived inside of her gut, and it's called Oxalobacter. I don't expect you to have heard of that before, but it's called Oxalobacter. And what Oxalobacter does, it eats a substance called oxalic acid or oxalate. Sometimes it's called calcium oxalate. Would you believe me if I told you that 95% of all kidney stones are made of only one substance? They're made of calcium oxalate. So if your granddaughter, well, thanks. If your granddaughter has had multiple rounds of antibiotics, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I'm just kind of guessing. But let's just say that she's had six rounds of antibiotics between the age of one day old all the way up to 23. Well, antibiotics could kill off the Oxalobacter, and what that means is when she eats either potatoes or spinach, or she eats nuts of basically any kind, I think almonds have the highest amount of oxalate in them, then what happens is those are going to form and precipitate stones forming in the kidneys. Okay? That's kind of the framework on how this happens. Now, in saying that, oh yeah, there are studies that show that the more soft drinks that a human being consumes, the greater the risk of developing calcium oxalate stones. Now, in saying that, every time that you drink a soft drink that's carbonated, that contains phosphoric acid, you are losing and dumping massive amounts of magnesium from your body. And if you dump and lose all your magnesium, it just washes straight through your kidneys. Well, guess what? Calcium's going to build up. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Study number next. The more refined sugar that a woman consumes, or a man, the more she's going to contribute to calcium building up in the kidneys and forming rocks or kidney stones. That probably makes sense to you because I think you're a student of health. But what the solution is, there's two or three solutions. Number one, well, you got to avoid foods probably for a season that are very high in calcium oxalate. That's usually spinach and the dark greens. I know, don't be upset. She probably likes turnip greens and collard greens, right?
Yes, she does.
I knew anybody related to you would be that way. Actually, y'all aren't weirdos. Y'all are the normal ones. It's everybody else that's a weirdo, right?
I don't know about that. But
I tried to bait you into saying yes, but I couldn't get you to do it. And so she may have a little bit higher need for magnesium intake. And, of course, I know that most people get this, but I'm going to repeat it again. Every individual is unique. They have their own unique body chemistry, and they have their own unique biochemical individuality. So one person, they may do just great with 100 milligrams of magnesium a day from their diet, but there's other people, it may take closer to 600 to 800 milligrams of magnesium just to keep them from developing kidney stones. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so here's the solution for you. If I had an emergency where somebody walked in my door and they said, Dr. Morgan, I've got kidney stones, the surgeon says he'll be glad to remove them, I just need to come up with $20,000 cash. Can you beat that? And I say, yes. For $30, I think I can dissolve them or remove them. I've tried so many things, but the number one herb that I would say that we need to run toward, it's called gravel root. I didn't name it, but it makes sense. If you think about it, probably somebody had a kidney stone, fell to the ground and said, hey, what's this root growing in the gravel right here? Maybe this will break up the gravel growing in my kidney. But gravel root, oh my goodness, that stuff is like a gold mine for dissolving kidney stones. So if somebody is prone to kidney stones like your granddaughter, we need to give her extra magnesium. We need to give her a little bit of gravel root. Now, the fat-soluble vitamin that I am convinced can be a game-changer is called minoquinone 4 or minoquinone 7. It's known as vitamin K2. That is a fat-soluble vitamin. And so, fat-soluble vitamins like K2, they're made by converting milk into cheese, just like I talked about earlier. So that fermentation process by good bacteria, well, it makes things that we need. And so your granddaughter, we actually have an opportunity to kind of improve her gut health here in order to prevent kidney stones. Does she like to eat fermented foods?
I'm not really sure. I know she likes pickles, so.
Okay, well, that's something. If you can get the pickles raw when they haven't been pasteurized, that's where we're going to get the most life force and the beneficial microorganisms. So everything from kimchi to Bubby sauerkraut to raw cheese. You could actually find raw goat cheese.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was
at Natural. Unless somebody makes it.
Oh, you do. Yes, are you on good terms with this individual?
I am.
Are you on pretty much good terms with everybody?
No, but I am on good terms with somebody who makes coaches.
Well, really, that's all that matters today. Forget the other people. And so if we could start, if she could start switching. Yeah, I mean, you just heard that article that I read about the two things that had the highest level of preventing cognitive decline were consuming cheese and a glass of red wine. Now, I am not telling a person to drink. That's not what I'm saying. Because, you know, a person may be prone to drinking to excess, kind of like my father was. So I get that. But a little bit is probably very good for you. I mean, didn't the Apostle Paul tell Timothy to have a little wine for the sake of his stomach?
Yeah.
So, between pickles and sauerkraut and kimchi and goat cheese and cow cheese, if she can tolerate that, other fermented foods, man, this could be like a home run.
And you said that she needs to take magnesium.
Yeah, that's a pretty strong guess that I have about her. She probably has a magnesium deficiency. And the other thing, and just give me artistic license here, if you have enough good beneficial bacteria living in your gut, they can make just about anything you need, like all the B vitamins. And if you're low in B vitamins, yeah, that kind of plays a role also in stones kind of building up. But she's just 23. I mean, if I were guessing right now, she's probably had 10 rounds of antibiotics. Could that be true?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I mean, we're living in a modern world where they give antibiotics. If you have like a runny nose for one nanosecond, they'll say, well, we better put them on amoxicillin.
Yep. Yeah. She has digestive issues she's had since she was pretty young. And so I gave her, as a present not long ago, a bottle of Mary's black radish and told her to take it in the morning and at night.
Did you just say you gave that as a present?
I did.
Well, that's better than giving her a Barbie doll by far.
That's true. I want you to take this in the morning and in the evening with food about 3, you know, and
there you go.
A day. And I said, this should probably help.
Well, did she report back to you and said, I'm better?
She said she was starting to feel a little better.
What does she call you, by the way?
Grandma.
Oh, I thought it was going to be something like Super Grandma. But anyway.
No, just Grandma.
Well, that's good.
So, what form of...
See, if she felt a little bit better when she took Spanish black radish, what that does is it scrubs out all the toxic germs.
Okay.
I mean, if it were me, I'd say number one, and I know I sound like a broken record, so please, please forgive me. But if a person ever feels bad enough, that can be like an opportunity to like have a different reality and change. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, you know human nature. People just don't change until they have that... come to Jesus meeting or near-death experience, right?
Yeah, she was in the hospital, and they gave her morphine for the pain.
Oh, my goodness, I guess so.
Painful.
So
I also discovered that she has, I don't know, a cyst or something, you know, and I said, all right.
Well, where's the cyst located, the ovary?
Probably.
Well, and the thing of it is, she doesn't want to repeat this again. I know that.
Well, she does.
And so if she's, well, I wasn't trying to make a joke, but we're on the same page on this deal. But so by whatever means necessary, so if she says, something's got to give, I can't do this again. I cannot do this one more time. Plus, you know what her bill's going to be? Never mind. Scratch that topic. I don't need an answer to that. I know what the answer is because people tell me stories every single day. So she doesn't need to go down this road again. So this is a chance and a great opportunity to completely change her diet to one that's going to serve her really well. Because if I were just guessing, your granddaughter is probably a very intellectually, emotionally radiant, radiant young lady. Am I right about that? I mean, she's an amazing person, isn't she?
Yes.
Okay. So we don't need to spend our energy with sickness. We don't do sickness and kidney stones. We do amazing wellness. We do energy. So she's going to have to make a modification. So the number one thing is, if she's used to eating sugar, she's just going to have to say, hey, sugar is probably the most toxic. Would you agree with me that sugar has a highly addictive property to it?
Yes.
It's kind of like crack. I don't really know what that's like, but I'm guessing that it's addictive.
Yeah, I would think so. That's what I've heard.
You know, I've talked to undercover narcotics agents, and they're dealing with heroin specifically. And even they will say that cigarettes can be more addictive than even heroin, or harder to break the habit of. So I kind of make a mental note of that. And so,
well,
like in,
also, you know, it's not against the law. So
you mean which one, the sugar?
The sugar or the cigarettes? Neither one of those yet have been against the law. So
you know, there is a compound that is currently, it is illegal, but it's non-addictive, and one dose of it causes a person to 85% of the time stop drinking alcohol and stop smoking cigarettes, but it's considered illegal. It comes from just a simple mushroom that grows out in the cow pie in the pasture. So they consider that illegal, even though if you look at a drug like Chantix, I think the success rate is like 25% at curing smoking or causing smoking cessation. But the drug makes a human so angry at the world that it has a very high suicide rate attached to it. By the way, the placebo effect would be about one-third or 33%. Chantix is a total failure. It's expensive, it's toxic, it's damaging. I think that anybody that prescribes it is nuts. Did I just say that on the radio?
You did.
Okay, I can't really retract it now, can I? But anyway, there's much better ways. But yeah, if we can break the sugar addiction, then she can have a new reality with her health.
So she needs to cut out the green stuff. So like the other day...
Well, the spinach is the big
broccoli
one.
Broccoli and all that other stuff. And then she said, I don't feel too well.
Well, what's our takeaway from that when she says she doesn't feel too well if she eats that?
Well, I said, you need to figure out what it is that you've eaten today that is making you not feel too well.
And it may be that for a short season, we need to give her like an apple a day. Of course, in my mind, how can you treat kidney stones or gallstones without lemon juice? It's impossible.
Yeah.
So if we could find a way to squeeze fresh lemon in a cup of water or tea or something like that and drink it down, it'd be like a home run. If you want
to scrub, I'd rather take a lemon and squeeze it and drink it in water every day.
You did good.
Okay. So one lemon, you think, a day?
I'm kind of hardcore on this topic. I think probably two or three if you've got kidney stones.
Okay.
And so what's in the lemon juice? It's a very, very precise solvent. It dissolves and breaks down debris in the body. It cleans out gunk. I know that you know that gunk is just a made-up word, but it kind of covers a lot of bases with me in my mind. So if somebody has gunk in their digestive tract, lemon juice helps dissolve that. If they got gunk built up in their liver or their gallbladder, lemon juice helps dissolve and wash the gunk out. If it's in the kidneys, guess what? Lemon juice dissolves and breaks down the gunk. I didn't want to say anything, but I own all the stock in lemon orchards around the world, and so every lemon sell makes me like a multi-zillionaire.
Good deal.
I'm joking. That's not true.
I'm so glad I finally met a multi-zillionaire.
Yes, if you need a loan, I am so loaded with money, it's unbelievable. You know what? A lady told me the other day that she had two lemon trees that were as tall as me, and I thought, oh, now there's wealth right there. You know, the thing of it is, what if a person doesn't need money to be happy? And they can be just very, very satisfied with the very simple pleasures of life. Like, I'm just so happy with this lemon tree. That's God. God gave it to me. And the truth of it is, money doesn't make a person happy, does it?
No.
Not at all. I know that, and you know that, right?
Yes, we do.
I know that you are one happy girl, with or without money. But money's nice, because if you had money, you could buy a lemon.
That's true. Or I could go visit a friend of mine who's got about 7 lemon trees.
Wait, I'm going to need the GPS coordinates of where these 7 lemon trees are located. Just...
It's the same place where the goat cheese is being made.
Man. Is there any way you could put in a word for Dr. Morgan?
Man,
what a great phone call today. You see how I turned all this around to benefit me?
I did.
So if she'll start doing lemon juice every day, that'll help clean her kidneys. It'll be a godsend.
Lemon juice. That's good. And she should continue with the Spanish black radish.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell you a quick story?
Yes.
This guy calls me on the phone. His name is Glenn. Great guy. He's so funny. I find him so entertaining, which it doesn't take much for me, but I think he's so smart and clever. Well, Glenn tells me that, I got to be careful how I say this, because maybe they're listening right now, but there's a family member that doesn't necessarily approve of him using natural remedies. We'll just leave it at that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he said they were going out to dinner, and I think he said it was his daughter and his son-in-law were in the car. And the son-in-law was talking about he's got this horrible neck pain. He's got like a crick in his neck. He cannot. Have you ever had a crick in your neck before where you couldn't turn over your shoulder to back up a car?
Yes.
It's bad, isn't it?
It is. It's pretty bad.
It's real bad. Anyway, so he's got this crick in his neck, and I can't remember what Glenn was telling me. He might have said he had it for 2 weeks. If I'm making that up, please forgive me, but... So Glenn says, here, let me take care of that for you. And he happened to have like a wedge or a slice of a lemon. Maybe it was in a drink. And so he squeezed the lemon juice directly over that side of the neck where the crick was in it. And everybody's in the cars like rolling their eyes like, this is ridiculous. I can't believe he would do this. This is so stupid. I could just imagine the conversation. I get to look at people roll their eyes all the time. I know what they're thinking. But he said within just 2 minutes, he goes, oh, my goodness. My neck pain is gone. The crick is completely gone. And I thought to myself, hey, Glenn, you loved him so much you were willing to risk disapproval of other people over a natural... But he fixed his neck just with a lemon. Isn't that great?
That is great.
Hey, if you had a crick in your neck, I would so squeeze a lemon right on it.
Well, I will remember that. So whenever I get a crick in my neck, I will guarantee you, I will lemon my neck.
Well, what do you got to lose? You got nothing to lose. There's nothing the lemon can do to you to harm you or hurt you, right?
That's right. I'm always telling people, take a lemon, do this, take a lemon, do that. They're like, what?
I have seen people with severe migraine headaches, and they couldn't break them. Snort fresh lemon juice up in their nose and they completely disappeared and went away. I know that's brutal, but you know what? Desperate times call for desperate measures, right?
I guess so.
Would I tell you if you had a severe migraine headache and you said, Dr. Morgan, nothing's touching this? I'd say, hey, let's snort some lemon juice. Hey,
considering I couldn't laugh at the time because my head would hurt so bad.
You got a good point there.
I probably couldn't even eye roll, you know.
So, yeah, you wouldn't have the strength. No, your eyes would be rolled in the back of your head. You wouldn't be able to. But, well, you know, you just do whatever it takes to get the body well, right?
That's right.
Okay. Especially if it's safe and non-toxic. And if that doesn't work, you can always go to the ER and take whatever drugs they give you. But I vote we do something before that point.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lemon costs 50 cents, the ER is going to cost you $2,000 minimum.
Easy.
Very easy. Yeah.
Very easy.
Not that I'm against the ER. I'm all for them. I'm glad they're there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, not everybody has a boatload of money, do they?
No. No, they don't. Well,
I so appreciate you. Thank you very much for your phone call today.
Hey, you have a wonderful week, and God bless you.
Oh, thank you so much. God bless you. I pray that he looks upon you with favor and your granddaughter.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, bye. Okay, you're listening to Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. There is a phone line that is officially open. It's 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, I'm 68 years old, and I'm very active, but I had a first bout with vertigo 2 weeks ago, and I'm just wondering what I could do to eliminate getting it again.
All right. Is the vertigo because of a sinus problem?
It was.
Okay, so if it's because of a sinus problem and it affected the eustachian tubes where they couldn't drain, then most likely that was a cause of it. But as far as you know, do you have anything that you're blowing out of your nose right now that's yellow or green?
Oh, no.
So you're over it, right?
Oh, yes. I went to, I didn't know what I was at a Bible study, and I just collapsed. And one lady thought I was having a stroke.
Yeah.
Nothing thought I was having a heart attack.
Your gyroscope didn't work right. You couldn't tell top from bottom, could you?
Or up from down.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah, and most likely it was just your eustachian tube became clogged up and created some back pressure, and the vertigo was the net result. So if you ever feel like you're coming down with sinus problems again, there is a substance. It is wicked, but it's good. Did I mention wicked?
Yes.
Oh, it's called Sinu Orega. It's like a form of the essential oil of oregano, and you can spray this in your nose, and it will open them up. But I'm not lying to you. It's strong.
Okay.
So if you did that at the start of a sinus problem, what you would do is you'd probably head off at the pass, or you could use like a saltwater rinse. I mean, what did somebody do 50 years ago? They took a warm cup of water, and they put a teaspoon of salt in it, maybe a teaspoon of baking soda, and they just poured some in their hand and snorted up their nose and blew all that gunk out. I know that doesn't sound attractive, but hey, that's natural, easy way to clean your sinuses.
Well, I do that. I use a sinus rinse, but I guess I got a little laxed in it.
Well, have you always been kind of prone to sinus issues?
Yes, I always have.
Do you think any of that could be related to consumption of dairy products, like cow products?
It could be. I love milk and cheese, so...
Well, and I'm not saying those are bad, but somebody prone to sinus problems, they may be a little bit more allergic to dairy than the average person. And so if you're always kind of prone to sinuses, you might actually get a bottle of that liquid remedy I told you about called Sinu Orega. And if you spray it up, I think it's like $13 and change for a bottle. It's worth every penny of it. But it can totally clean out all that mess.
And you just take it by mouth?
Spray it in your nose.
Oh, spray it in your nose, okay.
And by the way, I will not be giving you my cell phone number when you take it, because you may send me a rude message like, how dare you, Dr. Morgan, because it's strong. But I'll give you my word, it'll pass. It'll pass.
Oh, yeah.
You just may be like a little bit uncomfortable, like your nose and your sinuses are on fire for about 30 seconds. But trust me, it will pass.
Okay. All right. Well, I thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. And I hope you have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
Thanks, buddy. Bye. Okay, there is plenty of time left in the program. 903-586-5257. Okay, JP says I have till 5842. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Dr. Morgan, I haven't been able to listen in a while, and I just wondered, what is your take on the COVID vaccine?
Well, all right, it's going to be a real negative conversation, but here goes. The one from the manufacturer called Moderna is using what's called mRNA or messenger RNA in the vaccine. I have a serious problem with that. They're showing right now that when you take the Moderna vaccine, 2.5% of the population goes into severe anaphylaxis. Do you know what that is?
Yes.
That's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means allergic reaction. So they're saying now that the world's greatest geneticists and vaccine experts are saying, okay, What is the possibility that if you inject someone with messenger RNA, that they could actually develop long-term autoimmune problems? And they're finding out now. And see, we don't know this now, but you know, over time, we're going to find out very precisely what happens maybe over the next few years of all these people that have had this Moderna Corona vaccine. But here's the problem that I have. I'm going to ask you a stupid rhetorical question, so just take it as such, okay?
Okay.
Do you want to be injected with the DNA of another human being?
No.
Do you want to be injected with the DNA of an animal and have it bond itself to your gene? No, of course, the answer is no. It's a rhetorical question. But see, there's an enzyme in the body called transcriptase, and in the presence of transcriptase, which is an enzyme, you can take that messenger RNA from the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine or the Corona vaccine, and you can actually glue it, you know, cut it, splice it, just put it right there in your DNA, and that scares... I'm really nervous about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so okay. what they're thinking the net result is, I know this sounds bizarre, and you know what? I could be wrong about this. I will admit it if I am. I'm pretty good about that. But what it could mean is what they're really doing is they are making the people that take this vaccine so much more susceptible to A, developing autoimmune reactions where the organs get attacked by your own immune system and a person dies, or two, which I think is the more likely, or at least as likely as the first, that you could be so much more vulnerable to a respiratory viral infection than you were before that. Now, I know this sounds bizarre, and there's going to be a lot of people that are disagreeing. Can I tell you what happened to me the other day?
Yes.
I had a man that was supposed to come see me that had heart failure. I love cases like that because I believe very firmly that the heart is the one organ that can rejuvenate very, very easily under the right circumstances. But quite often, nobody ever tells these people what to do unless they come to somebody like me. Well, a man came in with heart failure, and when he and his wife walked into my office, they had a look of fear, and they were aghast when they looked at my face, because there was no face covering. I wasn't wearing a mask.
Mm.
And they became extremely livid and angry that I wasn't wearing a mask. And so they asked me in a stern voice if I was going to wear a mask. And I said no. And they said a bunch of words to me that were probably not repeatable on the radio. I'm not worried about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't go well. But I'm not worried about that. If you want to get sick, then wear a mask all the time. That's what the CDC survey is currently showing. When they look at all the people that have had the worst incidents of the coronavirus, it's the people that are wearing masks nonstop, because all you're doing is you're breathing in the severe mm-hmm. toxic filth. You're just recirculating it, recycling it. Bacterial
That's
pneumonia
right.
is going, yes, it's yeah, it's super strange that you would just breathe in bacterial waste and not expect to get pneumonia out of the deal. I mean, am I totally nuts? Am I off my rocker by saying these things? I think I'm being very clear.
I just wanted to confirm it. I knew what you were going to say, but I wanted to confirm it because there's so much pressure to get the vaccine.
Well, let me tell you what I want to focus on. You can take the rest of it with a grain of salt. I want you to have the most beautiful, radiant, vibrant, responsive immune system on the planet. How are we going to do that? Number one, you need vitamin D3 to make sure that your immune system can respond in the appropriate manner. So,
I take it every day. How many units should I take?
Well, during the wintertime,
does it matter?
I say, yes, it does. During the wintertime, I say about 10,000 IUs of vitamin D3. Now, in saying that, mm-hmm. your body actually makes its own antibiotics. It does. But the antibiotics that your body makes, they don't have any negative side effects, really. They don't harm you. You don't develop antibiotic resistance. And so you've got to have vitamin D3 to tap into your own natural production of antibiotics. So like anything else, there's a Goldilocks just right dosage. You know, that's just a figure of speech, but I like saying that. So 10,000 units a day during the wintertime when you don't get a lot of exposure to natural sunlight on your skin. But if you told me that you had come in contact tomorrow morning at church with a person that was hacking and coughing, and they should have not come to church, but they're sick, and they came to church anyway, that's wrong. Do not do that. And if you greeted them with a holy kiss and you said, oh, great, I just found out on Monday morning they tested positive for the coronavirus, I'd probably take somewhere between 30 and 50,000 IUs of vitamin D3 for a week just to help gently upregulate my immune system so it could respond better and more aggressively than what it would before. Now, the cornerstone of the immune system is zinc.
I take that every day.
If you want your body to produce antibodies against a virus or a bacteria or cancer, you've got to have zinc. So the drug azithromycin, what is it really? It's known as a zinc ionophore, and that means when you take that antibiotic, it helps your body better absorb zinc. So that may be how it works. Have you ever heard of hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine?
Yes.
It's also known as a zinc ionophore. So isn't it interesting the drugs that are successful at helping defeat the coronavirus are zinc ionophores, which means they help the body better utilize zinc. So I'm going crazy. Now, the other one, I can't really go into all the research, but you could look it up on YouTube easily. There's a drug that's been around a long time. It's been used by farmer after farmer and rancher after rancher. It's called ivermectin. I was looking at the studies yesterday on my lunch break, which you don't know this, but I'm a total nerd when it comes to reading stuff like that. I could read that all day long and just be the happiest man on the planet because I like that stuff. Because I want to use it to help other people, so that's why I get pleasure from it. But in one study, they went to a hospital in Bangladesh. I know that's over in the India part of the world. They had 100 cases of coronavirus. They gave ivermectin. They had a 100% cure rate. I promise you right now, there is no drug that the hospital can give you that has a 100% cure rate. But ivermectin, you can get that stuff over the counter if you want to. If you do, that's your call. If you want to go to the feed store, you want to get ivermectin, then that's your business. I'm not judging you. I'm not telling you. If anything, I am not judging you. I will not judge you. If you need to have the freedom to take care of yourself in a manner that you feel like is the very best. And
exactly.
So,
is that only injectable?
No, you can get it in tablet form.
Okay, I didn't know that.
But if I had only one pharmaceutical drug that I could personally take if I came down with a coronavirus, I'd take ivermectin. That's my choice. I can say what I want to say. That's what I would choose to take. I would not take hydroxychloroquine. I would take ivermectin. But that's my opinion. If you have a different opinion, that is fine by me.
Well, it's nice to have someone who has good opinions to draw on.
Well, you can put it all to the test, but if you got off the radio right now and you said, you know what, I'm going to Google studies and articles where ivermectin has been used, I think you're going to be really impressed. I have been really impressed by the results.
Exactly. Well, we have cows, and we've already heard stories of that. So
this is not a new idea to you, is it?
No. Like I said, I'm just wanting to
have you
confirm some things.
If you have a syringe handy with some ivermectin, just wait till your husband bends over and just put it to the test.
He would love it.
You mean he likes it when you sneak up behind him with a syringe?
No, he would love it to do it to me.
Oh, to do it to you.
Right.
What kind of a man is he? No, I'm joking. No, this is good. I really appreciate your phone call. I think that you're a fabulous person.
Thank you so much. I think you're fabulous too.
Oh, you're so kind.
I wanted some.
So I just gave you one. I gave you one small angle. There's no way I can flesh the whole thing out, but I can tell you this: I have never seen more people so terrified and scared to live as I have now.
Well, I have not been, but...
No, you're not.
as the vaccine, you know, as more and more people are taking the vaccine, they're trying to make me feel guilty because I don't want to take it.
You know what? And I get the same thing too, but I can tell you this. I absolutely have no guilt. I have no fear. I have no anxiety over this issue. None. Maybe I should, but I don't. But then again, I think I've read a little bit more and studied a little bit more than the average person has on this topic. So I feel like I'm in a very good place. I would rather focus my energy on what am I going to do to help my body heal and to be well. You know what? So many people are... I see what people buy. If I go to Walmart and it's the third of the month where people get those food stamp cards recharged and I see what right. they have in their buggy, they do not have apples, oranges, lemons, and limes in their buggy. There's not a shred of broccoli or cabbage or cauliflower. There's no bag of onions. They don't have cloves or garlic. There's no kimchi or sauerkraut in there. It ain't pickles. They don't have whole chickens. It's not fish. I could keep going and going.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I can tell you they have in there? Ramen noodles and pizza and Coca-Cola and nacho cheese Doritos and sugar. Cookie. It's just pure junk. That's what the average person is eating day in and day out. You know what? If somebody really, what they should do, do you see how I'm pulling myself back before I say it? Okay, Roy.
No, you don't have to say it.
Well, it's just that's the stuff that's beating the crap out of a person's immune system. Do you know what really destroys the immune system? Anxiety and fear does more to destroy the immune system because there are fear receptors on your cells. And when you're scared or you're fearful or you're stressed, your immune system, it cannot do its job. That's one of the reasons why when somebody's terrified of getting a diagnosis of COVID-19, oh my goodness, they worry themselves literally to death. I know people that haven't been out of their home in a year, basically.
I know. And then I had a friend who has not, and she got the vaccine, and she said, I feel like a bird out of a cage.
After the vaccine?
Yes.
See there? In her mind, now she's confident. Before, she was terrified.
Right.
Okay. Now, in reality, we're going to find out. Oh, baby, we are going to find out if what they've told us is exactly the truth. So if I'm right about this, what are you going to think a year from now if more people are getting sick and they're not actually healthier? Well,
right.
we're going to find out, aren't we?
Yes.
But I love everybody. I don't wish harm on anyone. I want people to be very, very strong and radiant.
Right. Strong and courageous. God tells us not to fear. So.
Isn't it a biblical command to fear not and to be anxious for nothing?
Exactly.
I agree with you. I love it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. I pray that God blesses you and keep being a strong woman.
Thank you.
I know you're not going to argue with those people that are trying to make you feel guilty, but I think you've got to stand firm on your own convictions, just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hang in there.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.